All right, welcome to another episode of Say Word with Kev. I'm your host, Kevin, and I'm here with a good friend of mine. His name is Chris John. He's a software developer at Plotly. He graduated in software engineering. Welcome to the show, man. How are you doing?
Hey, thanks for having me, Kevin. How's it going?
Good, good. It's going great. So this might be a little bit depressing, or it might be interesting, depending on how you look at it, but I was reading this article somewhere, and it was saying that the top five professions with the most divorces. And I guess I saw software engineering to be one of them. And so definitely a lot of ideas in my head as to why that is. But I just wanted your take on sort of why is it that so many software engineers, just so many people in tech in general, are getting divorced or their social life is getting affected. Why do you think that is?
Wow, what a way to start the podcast, man. That's a pretty heavy question.
We go hard here. We go hard.
Yeah, okay.
No holding back.
Before I answer, when was this study conducted or the survey?
This survey was actually conducted last year.
And last year?
The year before. So I was at the top five, within the top five. It was actuaries. It was dentists. One of them was people like a software developer. And I forgot the other two. But definitely within the top five, it would be something in technology. So for example, software engineering, software developer, something like that. And so just looking at that, because we're both in tech, right? Like we know how much work it takes to, keep a tech job, let alone get it. So I was just wondering, why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, I can't really speak for married people. I'm not in a marriage currently. But if I had to guess, I think all the professions that you've mentioned, actuaries, dentists, and I'd say even, software engineers today, it's a quite demanding job depending where you work at. And I guess it really depends on who you work for. Are we talking about those FAANG companies, right? Mm-hmm. So I know I've heard stories about Facebook or Amazon or Apple. They're high pressure, high demand environments. They expect a lot from you. And I think it's not really out of the question that you would see software engineers spending a lot more time than they want. I guess having their time taken away from their spouses or children. Yeah, I guess it's not just exclusive to tech. I could probably see it in finance or investment banking as well.
So high pressure jobs. Cause I was actually, I don't know if you watch the tech lead on YouTube or a few of his videos, but for those of you.
Oh, that guy on YouTube?
Yeah, exactly. So this guy is, he pumps out content about technology. He used to work for Google. I think Facebook, don't quote me on that, but he definitely worked for large FAANG companies. Companies in part of the FAANG realm and other big companies too. Has amazing educational credentials and accolades, but and he made this public, so there's no problem with me saying it, but his marriage broke down and his family broke down. So it really made me think, is all of this worth it, to be in a tech job? Because I find that a lot of people, who work for a huge company end up quitting in a year or a year and a half. It's seldom do you see somebody go past 2 years. And the route forward would be to start their own thing or, just to take a break and do some traveling or something. So I think maybe a year or 2 years would be the life cycle of somebody working for a huge tech company.
And I don't really have the best impression of the tech lead. I guess he's just one example of what happens. What I would probably say is it's different for everyone. I think some people are just meant to thrive in those environments. Some people are not, but I guess the glamour of working at those companies is very, very attractive to a lot of people, those high paying salaries. But I guess to a lot of people, once they reach that supposed peak of, getting that six figure salary, I guess people don't really know what to do after, because I think a lot of the time people kind of lose track of what they want to do after achieving their big goal, right? Because people sometimes might lose, or once you reach the peak, right? Like, what is there to do?
Yeah.
Right? So it's not the best idea to, I guess, put those companies as your main life goal, to be working as a software engineer.
So right? I guess it's more about the name and the reputation to put on your resume rather than like being passionate about forwarding or advancing their technology, or, you know, like.
And this is not to knock anyone who is working for those companies. It's like, yeah, most of us would love to work for these companies, right? But I think people sometimes might be applying or trying for these companies for all the wrong reasons. And they may not be ready mentally at their current age, for example. Mm-hmm. I just feel like some people might not be well suited to these high pressure environments. And I guess we kind of digressed about the whole divorce survey, right? At the end of the day, you know, these big companies, you are sort of a smaller piece of a bigger equation, right? These companies will not necessarily have your interests. They won't prioritize your interests, right? So yeah, I think just, it's more.
Yeah, you're just a more, number, I guess.
Yeah. You have to take care of yourself first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's so many factors to it. There are all these societal pressure, you know, I guess norms that people feel like they need to abide to, right? Abide by. And again, it's different for everyone.
So when do we cross the line? Like, when do we call it? When do we like say, this is it, you know, like a lot of people, I guess it also depends on the person too, right? But, you know, some people can embrace the grind and work on the weekends and, you know, work, you know, regular work days and then plus another additional 5 to 10 hours, you know, cut into the night. But like, I guess for me, I think that the second I'd have to start working, you know, 12 hours a day, working 6-7 days a week, cutting into the weekend, like I wouldn't really care, you know, what company I'm working for. I think that that's when I'll say, you know, this is not as important as, you know, a social life. It's not as important as, you know, a personal life, and other things like that, like your hobbies, you're entitled to do that as well. So, and you see this a lot in finance for sure, but like tech is notorious for something like this. So I guess like, when do you say like enough is enough in a job?
If it's taking time away from what you really like doing, or if it's preventing you from maintaining, you know, positive relationships with your family, your friends, I think that's where I would draw the line.
Yeah.
If I'm working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, I think it better be something that I totally believe in, that I would,
that's that I would be a ride or die. $200K a year. Let's say you get paid $200K a year. I guess a lot of us would be like, no, I don't really care.
I mean, what's the point of having $200K a year if you're working all that time?
Yeah.
Right? Like, why not try to earn $200K working less, or like working, you know, working smarter, I guess. There are so many different ways to make money, right? I think, you know, yeah, the 200K is a flex, obviously. And you know, you want to say that, you want to tell people, or, oh yeah, I work at so-and-so. But I don't know if it's worth it. Spending that, like, more than 50, 60, 70% of the week just working towards something that you don't necessarily want to do. And we'll take my words with a grain of salt too, because I'm not really in that situation, right? So I don't know if I can speak for most people, but yeah, I guess $200K is a lot of money.
So what seems more enticing to you? Like, working for a huge tech company, something like Facebook, or something like a really huge, widely reputable company, or just going for broke and just trying to start your own thing at this point in time. So let's say you got two boxes, right? Or two pills. The green pill, I don't know why I said green, but the green pill is if you take this green pill, you are automatically at a high position in Facebook. Or you take the red pill and you are in a situation where you have a few dedicated people, you're in a startup situation, but you're in this you're in a situation where, like, you know, you're still trying to get it going. So I mean, like, what is more enticing to you? And for me personally, taking away all the other responsibilities out of the equation. So, like, let's say, like, rent or whatever it is, like, let's not worry about that. Let's say you don't have any other obligations. For me personally, it would be the startup route. Whether it works or not is definitely irrelevant to me. But for me personally, it'll be the startup route. But yeah, what would it be for you then?
I think both paths are pretty valid, so in my opinion.
Yeah. So would you do one then the other? Because a lot of people would, like, try to get a job at, like, a big tech company, have that reputation, or, like, learn some of the ropes and then go to a startup, or, like, create their own startup. Some people stay at this big company, or people just go straight to a startup, depending on some other factors. So, like, for you, would it be the systematic progressional route of going from a big company to a startup? Or are you just that guy who's like, all right, I'll just go for broke and just do the startup route?
Okay, so to answer your question, does it have to be one or the other, or can I have a mixed?
Let's say in this situation, it's one or the other.
One or the other. Okay, so you mentioned about going for broke, right? Starting a company by yourself, right?
Yeah.
I think those are valid points. I totally agree with you. But maybe I'll play the devil's advocate. Maybe for working at a reputable company, making a pretty good salary, right? Pretty decent salary. Yeah, I would argue for that, maybe, because it depends what you're working towards. Because, like, I guess the pros of working for a big company, obviously, you're going to be around smart people, very talented engineers, right? So you're going to learn a ton.
That's true.
That is very true. And I think, you know, software engineering is just an endless journey of just learning as much as you can, right? And it helps that you're working with some of the best minds in the business.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Salary also matters, because at the end of the day, you also have to pay rent. Or do we exclude rent out of this question?
No, let's just forget about all the other obligations.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, it's hard to not talk about that if we're going to talk about the higher salary that you'd be receiving, right? People like to say, oh yeah, money is not the biggest be all end all of things, but money, it solves a lot of problems too for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And it is totally understandable if people choose to secure the bag, right? Because they just feel more comfortable doing that. But again, it's a personal thing. Maybe they want to take care of their parents. I think that's also very commendable, right? It depends on the situation.
Those are good points, actually. Very valid points. And that's interesting to hear, because, like, you really get to see, like, the more eyes on, like, a situation, the better, because you get to see, like, people, the different perspectives of different people, right? And, you know, where they're coming from and what the decision they make and the rationale behind that decision. It's, you know, you know, there's a lot of things to keep in mind, and that's pretty cool, man. Those are good points. So,
but yeah, if it were up to me, I'd probably do both. Like, why not?
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't have to be one or the other. I really do think it's valuable to work at least a couple years at a big company. I think it's obviously with those reasons that I just told you, but it's good to have different perspectives of things, right? Mm-hmm. You take lessons from different situations and you apply them, right? I don't know if I could necessarily start a company by myself, just straight out of school, because for me, I just want to learn as much as possible, right? It's not really, it's not been a recent goal of mine to start build an app or some sort of startup, right? Because I can't necessarily say I have this burning idea that I've been meaning to pursue and I'm ready to drop everything and just focus my entire life on this.
Yeah.
But I think if I were to work at a bigger company, then that, I guess, opens a lot of doors. So if you do decide to build your own company, then you'll have that network of people that you can maybe turn to or reach out and say, hey, let's start this company. I think we got a good shot at it. Let's see where we go. And I think that's a common route that most people take if they do wish to become an entrepreneur or a startup.
Yeah, I think those are one of the main points, honestly. Like working at those big companies, you're surrounded by so much knowledge. And even the small companies too, right? Like being around people that know so much and you're just like a sponge absorbing everything from them. I think that's like the main goal is to like just to be able to learn as much as possible. The goal for me anyway, right? And man, you kind of convinced me a little bit. I'm not gonna lie. Like I knew those points before, but hearing you saying them, I'm like, maybe I'll go for a big company now. I don't know.
I mean, there's no right answer to this. It's just like my perspective. This should not discourage anyone who has an idea and wants to go for it, right?
Definitely, definitely. So as a software developer, as a somebody in tech, like what does Chris John, the software developer, do in his spare time? So when he's not working, when he's not, coding or doing something for the job, like what are you doing in your spare time? And don't tell me leak code or more coding, because that is too much. I'm joking. But like, what does Chris John do in his spare time?
I actually do leak code just to
because I myself check.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you do leak code too, right?
Yeah, but like I'm not crazy. I'm not doing it crazy, but yeah, I am guilty. I do it. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so aside from leak code,
yeah,
I love watching sports. I've been a huge fan of the NFL, the Premier League, MLB, every single league.
Yeah, you watch a lot of different sports, right? Soccer, basketball, like football, I guess. But like soccer has so many different leagues. Like it's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I would actually prefer to watch live sports over TV shows. That's how much, like if Thursday Night Football's on, yeah, I'd rather watch that. Or if...
Yeah, you and me both. You and me both.
Yeah. We talk about MMA as well, right? And
yeah,
a little bit of boxing.
Sweet, sweet. Yeah, what's your favorite? What, like, let's say all of these sports are happening at the same time. Like, what would you rather tune into? Like, what's your go-to sport? Or are you just like, whatever?
Oh man, it's very rare that all these sports are happening at the same time, right? We sort of saw this year because of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL, the NHL. The Premier League, they're all on because they were postponed and they're all playing. They have to finish their seasons and playoffs. I think if I had to choose, I would probably watch Premier League or Champions League football. Okay. I'm a huge Man United fan. I actually have a podcast, but I'll plug it later. But
My family's more La Liga. So, but like my dad does actually watch Premier League, and he's like an Arsenal. I think he's Arsenal.
But, that's a shame.
Yeah. Hey man, yeah. I don't know what that's supposed to mean, because I don't really watch like Premier League or soccer all that much. But what I do know is that my dad's side of the family is like huge, huge like football fans. So like,
yeah,
you guys would definitely get along.
I think a lot of my passion for sports also comes from the statistical side, right? So think of any sport, right? Especially baseball. Baseball, basketball, football, American football, right? I play fantasy. It's really interesting to see all these projections before the season. And, there are a lot of things out of your control when you supposedly draft players for your team, or it's there, you know, there's the excitement side to sports and the thrill and the emotion. And there's also the analytics and data side to it that I really enjoy.
Right. Yeah. That's, you don't hear that often, right? Where someone is, you know, in tune with sort of the numbers of the sport, the statistical perspective of the sport, projecting, you know, extrapolating, seeing if those predictions come true, you know, setting statistical expectations for different players and stuff like that. And then there's the excitement of the live event. So definitely like two sides of it. I mean, I find it like pretty cool if like a person were to be able to like not only know teams and know players, but just spit straight stats. Like that's like not a lot of people can do that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to come off as like a stats nerd. It's like,
that's fine.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's like, it's not that. It's like, I appreciate both sides to it. Right.
Yeah.
It's, I think with a lot of sports, you know, what drew me in is just the personalities.
Exactly. And
people will ask me, oh my God, like, why are you so into the sports? It's like a TV like series.
Yeah.
You know? There's like exactly. There's a storyline. I mean, I could equate this to MMA, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. you watch Khabib. You watch yeah. GSP because you want to follow their journey. The reason why, you know, Conor McGregor is such a popular figure and such a cash cow for Dana White is yeah. because like he transcends sport almost. Right?
Oh, 100%. He's been compared to Muhammad Ali. He's been compared to Chael Sonnen, if you know who that is.
Yeah,
he's been compared to Anderson Silva in like sort of the way that like how dominant he was at featherweight. And you know, knocking out Jose Aldo and the things like that. And that's, yeah, I totally understand. Like MMA is my sport. MMA and boxing are the sports that I keep up with personally. And even in boxing, man, like for people that don't even know boxing, they'll know who Ryan Garcia is, you know, Instagram boxing. He's on YouTube, Ryan Garcia. They'll know who Joe Frazier is. They'll know who, you know, the
Mike
great
Tyson.
Like Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr. Especially Mike Tyson coming out of retirement right now. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I know people who don't follow like no boxing at all, 0%, getting excited about this fight. And it's like, that's how much the star power comes out. That's how much personality, you know, plays a factor into, you know, getting or getting the interest of the general public.
So. Yeah, I'm not really I wouldn't say I'm well-versed in boxing, but I think they do market, you know, the big fights pretty well, right? The Fury and Wilder match,
mm-hmm.
the first two matches, the Triple G and Canelo fight,
exactly.
That was pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
It's all about marketing, right? I guess like I think all these promoters want as many casual fans to watch it as possible, right?
Yeah, the thing about boxing is that, and the reason why I you know, obviously I'm a practitioner of boxing, but the reason why I prefer watching MMA or, you know, being more involved in MMA than boxing is because with boxing, it's more corrupt. Like there's so many sanctioning bodies. There's so many champions in every division. Like you look at a division like welterweight, 147 pounds, right?
Yeah.
There's like 50 weight classes. You go up 2 pounds, that's another weight class. You go up 3 pounds, that's another weight class. And every weight class has like 4 to 5 champions. So like if you think about like boxing, they'll have like different bodies like the WBA, WBC, IBF, WBO, all this other like IBU, whatever, right?
I found that so confusing.
Yeah, I'm just making stuff up right now. And they're all different bodies that give out different bullshit titles. And like, you know, one guy could be a champion and another guy could be also the champion, but has a different, like, where do you, like, there's so much stuff going on. And speaking of the Canelo Triple G fight, I thought Triple G won that first fight along with 90% of the people that watched the fight. But
who was that judge? Adelaide Bird, I think her name was.
I think so. I don't remember. Yeah. Yeah. But they scored it a draw because, you know, obviously Canelo's, you know, I think Oscar De La Hoya was promoting
the
event. And, you know,
yeah, of course.
Canelo was obviously At that time, Canelo was with Oscar. He's not anymore, but at that time, he was with Oscar. And, you know, it's just a bunch of corrupt people just running the game, as opposed to the UFC, where it's the UFC, that's one company. Every division has one champion. Every now and then, there's the odd interim champ, but that's understandable. That happens when the main champ is out for like a year or two with injury.
I think that happens way too often, especially
nowadays.
I mean, the whole Conor Mayweather fiasco. I mean, it was interesting to watch, right?
But right.
Like, I think that really hurt Conor's MMA legacy because mm-hmm. he never defended the lightweight. He never defended the lightweight title.
Yeah.
Because I think he dropped it and then he fought for it with Khabib, and then obviously he lost convincingly, right? Mm-hmm. The argument against Khabib, like, he takes a whole year. Like, he only fights once a year, I think.
Right? I mean, he has Ramadan at a part of the year. I think it takes up 3-4 months.
Yeah.
And then he'll need like a 3-month training camp, and then he'll fight.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess that makes sense. But at the same time, I do agree that he could be a little bit more active.
I wanted to ask you this because I know Joe Rogan had this debate about mm-hmm. who is the pound for pound best MMA fight of all time, right?
Of all time or currently?
Oh, I mean,
right now there's a pound for pound list, right?
But, yeah. So they put Khabib at number one, but I still mm-hmm. think John Jones should be number one despite everything.
Ooh, yeah, that's you know, because there's two arguments to this. So basically, so John Jones, obviously, you know his history, right? Like.
I think everyone knows.
Yeah, he's been popped for, you know, EPOs or some type of steroids. He's been into a lot of, you know, different legal problems. And Khabib's been straight. But the one thing, which is a good argument, is that Khabib's never lost or almost has never lost a round. The only round that he lost was to Conor McGregor in the third round of his first in that fight.
Yeah.
And controversially, the first round of his most recent fight against Justin Gaethje. Which I don't know how he could have lost that round. It's totally, it baffles
me. I don't think Gaethje, I mean, it was sort of close, and I think people were kind of inclined to, you know, give it to Gaethje, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, Khabib, yeah, never, I don't think he ever bled, right? Not a scratch.
I don't think so.
Every task, I guess, we'll never really know about Ferguson and Khabib like a few years ago, because that fight was never going to happen, I guess.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was scheduled like five times.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, exactly. Yeah. Back to the question. I think, as the big picture, I do think John Jones is the pound for pound, because he's just wiped out the entire division, right? And his legacy is not over yet. He's moving up to heavyweight, possibly challenging for the heavyweight belt against, you know, Stipe Miocic or whoever will have it in a few months. Because I think Miocic is going to fight that beast in Ngannou, who's just been knocking everybody out.
Yeah, but, My first fight wasn't even close, though. It was like 50-44.
Exactly.
For Miocic.
Exactly. Yeah, Ngannou just got tired. I don't think he took Miocic seriously. I thought he was going to knock him out in the first round. So. But
I
also wouldn't be mad if people saw Khabib as the GOAT, because I also see that Khabib has been like dominant, very dominant in his last, I think, 29 fights. He's been dominant in every fight. But with John Jones in his last five fights, you can see the Santos fight, Reyes.
Yeah.
You know, the DC fights, it was a competitive fight. So there's been fights where, like, it could have gone either way.
Right.
The Gustafsson fight, the Reyes fight, the Santos fight. You know, I forget which other fights. But there's been decisions where, like, it could have gone to the other person. And so if that's the argument for Khabib, I wouldn't be mad if you made that argument. But me personally speaking, just the reign that John Jones has had and his continued legacy – taking away all the other stuff, like, I do think John Jones is currently the pound for pound GOAT.
Who's your favorite fighter of all time?
My favorite fighter of all time, in MMA?
Yeah.
That's a good one. I would say my favorite fighter is GSP for sure.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Like
I agree with
he
that.
like just I mean just he's Canadian, first of all. And just he's improving every fight. Granted he lost, but you can see the progression in his game at every fight. He just continues to get better and better. So, and I do feel like if Khabib comes back, which I think he would, GSP could be the next opponent for him. I think they can get that done
Oh, at what weight though? I like.
either at a catch weight or at lightweight. GSP's cut to lightweight before, actually.
Oh man, yeah, but like, he's. Do you think he'll do it at that age, to
I mean,
155? I don't know. Like,
he stays training though. Like he's not,
his
like he's in
last,
good
yeah,
shape.
his last fight was a middleweight against Bisping. I remember watching that a few years ago. But
That was a
that's
great
like
fight.
30. Yeah, that was a great fight. I actually, if I actually ran into GSP at a club in
Really?
Montreal.
Oh, no way.
It was, I think it was last year.
Really?
Yeah, he actually is a shorter than I thought. But he's incredibly like stocky.
He's
You could
stocky,
tell,
yeah.
very, very stocky, but really nice guy. Like, you've seen it with his interviews as well. I think he really is like someone you absolutely have to root for. He's very likable, very humble, and I think that's what I liked about GSP. I guess obviously, from especially the fact he's Canadian, right? I think he represents the sport so well.
Yeah, if you're ever looking for a role model in the sport or somebody to be the face of the sport, it would be him, definitely. But my favorite fighter from an entertainment point of view is definitely Conor. Like
Oh yeah.
I'm a huge Conor fan. And Adesanya or Adesanya, as they say it, because
Yeah.
the African way of saying it.
Is he's going to like heavyweight to fight Blahowicz, right? I think it
Yes,
is. Yeah.
yes.
So is that
Jan.
setting up for the John and Izzy fight if Izzy wins? I'd
Maybe because
assume.
there's a good storyline behind it, because the storyline could be, oh, John moved on, but then his throne is now being taken over by Adesanya, and now he's going back to reclaim the throne that he let go of. I mean, there's a million ways marketing wise to go about it, right? And so that's going to be a huge fight, and that fight has to happen because they're around the same age. Adesanya's 31, John Jones is like 32, 33. They're roughly around the same age, so it makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah, I think it is also sort of hard to sell a Blachowicz fight, right? And
But
it makes a
that's
lot of sense because Izzy's pretty, he has convincingly wiped out most of the division, I'd say. I know Whitaker is set up for the rematch, but I know he's wanting to rest for Christmas at least,
Yeah,
right?
Dana said he didn't want to fight, which is
That's
totally
fine.
true.
Oh, my other favorite fighter, Max Holloway.
Man, Max Holloway is a G.
Love Max.
Favorite performance was when he beat up Ortega in Toronto. That was such a master class by Max. Man, it's crazy. It really like there's so many fighters that I can choose from. I just said GSP, and it really is, but man, there's just so many talented fighters in the UFC roster, and even other rosters too, like Bellator and ONE Championship. Like they have a bunch of talented people fighting for them. And to be honest, I mean, I like how the MMA landscape is right now compared to 5, 10 years ago. It's really becoming a huge sport. They've gotten deals with ESPN.
The
Sport.
ESPN Plus money, man.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. And like a lot of major sports broadcasting platforms, I don't know, like TSN, SportsCenter, they're all covering MMA, and that's what I like to see, because like I've been watching MMA since, I don't know, before high school. I think since UFC like 50 or 55 or 60, something like that.
Dana's just done so well. I mean, I know people, a lot of people do not like Dana for pretty good reasons too, but I think he's just done an amazing job just growing the
Amazing.
sport as well.
All right, guys. Well, you know, thanks, Chris, for being here. That wraps up the time today. Yeah, man, thanks for being on the show and taking the time to talk to me today, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Cool. Thanks, guys, for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode of Say Word with Kev. See you, everyone.